Welcome to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Knowing that ultimately it's God who does the healing, Dr. Medici acts as the maestro, orchestrating a person's health through right timing and right therapies, using traditional, natural, alternative, and spiritual practices. Dr. Medici says it's time for people to wake up to their innate potential to heal and to be given a doctor who can orchestrate that healing. Dr. Medici is currently working toward his PhD in biochemistry at Long Beach University, with additional study in acupuncture, kinesiology, and quantum medicine. He's the curriculum director of the Santa Monica Shiatsu School. And now, here's Dr. Medici.
Good morning, my friends. Get the thinking cap on right now, because we got a lot to do today. Unless, of course, you have to leave and run to your holistic practitioner, and you couldn't listen to the show. And if you're on your way to your holistic practitioner, I have a lot to say about that experience today. What we're going to do today is something I've wanted to do a long time, and that's actually give you a perception of the methodology, the process through which your holistic doctor, and that can be a chiropractor, that can be an acupuncturist, that can be a medical doctor, that can be a layman that took some courses in nutrition, that can be a dietitian, but whoever you've developed that relationship, whoever you trust to make your recommendations for that ever-precious issue for you called your health, your symptomology, your chronic issues, perhaps even your diseases and the things that you're hoping you do for your body that help those diseases evolve to a better state. What's the process that they go through? Otherwise stated, what are you paying for, really, when you see a holistic doctor and you get recommendations? How does that doctor approach his conclusions? What does he do? What does he test with? How does he think? How does he come to the conclusions about your health? I'm going to tell you a story. Short point. I graduated chiropractic school, Cleveland Chiropractic College. That was in 1994. Actually, it was December 11th, 1993. That school, 2 years ago, in Los Angeles, it joined with the mother school in Kansas. So that school's not there anymore. But in the last year of school, and all doctors go through this, every single company selling every single product, nutritional and otherwise, diagnostic tools and testing equipment and otherwise, comes and the doctors are taken to lunch, they're spoken to, they're invited to seminars, they're mentored, they're given this tremendous impetus to go out when they practice and buy equipment to supposedly help them in the process in which they render you, the consumer, a concept about your health. You're supposed to go out and buy stuff. Much of the holistic industry, as from the standpoint of the doctor, is you put yourself through 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 hard years of school. And a lot of these schools are fantastic. My chiropractic school, Cleveland Chiropractic College, that was a good 6,000-7,000 hours of a lot of work. I mean, I had luxuries there that I think few people in holistic educations do. For instance, I got to run my dissection lab. I was friends with the doctor, the medical doctor, actually, that ran the dissection lab. And through the 4 years at the school, I got to dissect hundreds of bodies. I would be in there sometimes till 10, 11 o'clock at night, just taking apart bodies, looking at all the different parts, all the different intricacies. So when we studied anatomy, physiology, neuroanatomy, cell biology, so on and so forth, you really had a tremendous hands-on understanding. And this was fantastic for me. And when I got to graduate then, it was time to put this knowledge to use. And this is when everybody shows up at your door telling you where to spend your money, what tools to buy. So you go out and you spend money and you buy all the equipment. And that equipment can take the form of iridology machines. And I want to get into a lot of what these things are. You may never have heard of these things, or you may have been tested with one of them and you don't really understand what and why you were and whether you should really trust it. And of course, from iridology to dark field microscopy to Meridian stress testing, EAV machines, Avatar machines, Computron machines, Acuscope machines, MyoPulse machines, tongue diagnosis, pulse diagnosis, the various forms of kinesiology. Holistic doctors, holistic practitioners are out there studying these things, spending money on the equipment, and then telling the consumer, you know, come here, sit down, let's do this test on you, and based on this test, I'm going to make recommendations about your health that you should listen to because the test shows. Today, I want to refine that process for you. Because I was that student. I was that young doctor. I was that more mature doctor now. And I've had over 20 years, a wonderful time piecing all of this together to get reality. And I don't think that reality is very clear. And I think we're making a lot of mistakes that come from, well, too much optimism sometimes, too much pessimism sometimes. Too much of a faith in what people tell us that we should really test ourselves and put to our own experience. And this is natural. When you get out there and you put your sign out and you say, I'm a practitioner, I can help you, I'm a doctor, I'm a licensed chiropractor, I'm a licensed acupuncturist, you really want to give it your best. And yet, looking at it over 20 years, there are so many holes in this game. The methodologies are not refined. Not nearly refined, and the public suffers. So I want to give you a perspective here. So what do we have out there? We've got iridology, dark field microscopy, tongue diagnosis, pulse diagnosis. We have lab tests, specialized lab tests from Geneva Labs, from Metametrics Labs, from what was and no longer is Great Smokies Labs. These are specialty labs through the United States. And of course, whether you're doing muscle testing or iridology or dark field microscopy or pulse and tongue diagnosis, whether you're using an Acuscope or MyoPulse machine, the public knows that they only have to turn to their medical doctor, to allopathy, to be told all of this is nonsense. All of this is just a lot of baloney. These tests don't work. They're not reproducible. They're a great big lie. The people doing them aren't well trained, and you really shouldn't spend your time, energy, and money over issues like your health, such an important issue, to be just shamrocked in an area that really you can't trust. It's very easy to find that opinion. You just have to sit at Christmas dinner with the other members of your family that think this is nonsense. Well, you know what? 50% of it is a lot of nonsense. And I am here to tell you that today. The other 50% of that is a miracle. Knowing how to get rid of the baloney so that you're left with the essence is what this show is about today. If you're new to the show, I'm Dr. Vincent Medici. This is Straight Talk on Health. And I don't think you can get it any straighter. I ask the embarrassing questions I have from the day I was born and will continue to. And when I graduated chiropractic school, took a couple of years of education in acupuncture, I saw things that, well, kept me occupied for now 2 decades. At the same time, I saw a great deal of nonsense. And I tell you, you suffer because of that nonsense. So whether you're a young holistic practitioner or you are a veteran consumer, listen to this show today. Or get to the website, the archives, on straighttalk.cc. That's not .com, .cc. And you can listen to these shows at your leisure because you might be out working out today. It's February and it's, what, 80 degrees already? Okay. Let's talk about German medicine. I want you to understand that 50, 60, 70 years ago, the Germans were doing things that would later become the basis, the foundation for holistic medicine in the United States. And when Steven Spielberg, now we're shifting to film for a moment, remember in the early 80s when he did Raiders of the Lost Ark with Harrison Ford? And then he followed it up with the sequel about the Holy Grail. That was the one he did with Sean Connery. That was the third one. Fantastic films. Academy Award nominated films, wonderful films, at least the first one. And what was that about? It was about the Germans, in this case, the Nazi Party, having this thing about mysterious knowledge, about powers that would come to you that you couldn't see if you searched in holy places. Thus, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Thus, the search for the Holy, the Ark of the Covenant, and then the search for the Holy Grail. And the Nazi Party actually looked for these things. You know, you don't know, maybe you do, that many of these movies that we see are very, very seriously researched. Now, we stretch it to make the story. So you take a story like Braveheart or Raiders, and we have enormous historical fact there. Researchers are paid a lot of money to get the data. And then we twist it into a film. The point is that data, that information about how Germans in the 20s and 30s were in deep pursuit of ancient esoteric knowledge became, believe it or not, the foundation for so much of holistic medicine. Now, what was that about? Well, you got to understand the power of the Mercedes-Benz. That's a great car. That's a German car. BMW, Porsche, and Volkswagen. The special thing about the German character was that it would take the esoteric, take the energetic, take Eastern medicine, meridian theories, concepts in acupuncture, etc., and tie it into hard science. They would tie it into hard science, meaning they would take their engineers, they would take their medical doctors, they would take the best minds that Germany had, and they would study energetic or meridian-based medicine. And they would look for the intersections between the two. And out of that, up sprang throughout Germany in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. Today, if you're really sick, you go to the Black Forest of Germany and you look at the healing centers there run by medical doctors. German medicine is still more evolved holistically than what we have in the United States. And these medical doctors have very intense educations. And they treat the sick and diseased. The Paracelsus Clinic, Dr. Rau, R-A-U, of the Paracelsus Clinic in Germany/Switzerland, is an example. There's Dr. King, one of the great cancer doctors, presently practicing on and in the Black Forest of Germany, on the lake there. So you got to understand the roots of these traditions that Western medicine in this country calls nonsense began with a very hard science combined with the mystical, or what technology could not find or measure. It's really not the mystical. That's an exaggerated word of it. A meridian exists. It truly exists. We call it the mystical because we can't see it. And we're not having the best time measuring it presently, but we will. But over 10 to 20 years, we will. So much of this medicine began in Germany. I have $250,000 in testing equipment. And my point to you is that when I look at all this equipment, some of which is collecting dust, I see a number of mistakes that were made and that are made today. Number one, when you buy an iridology machine or a microscope or a meridian machine, one thing that your doctor, your holistic practitioner has been told by the manufacturer, by the people that teach these machines, one thing they've been told is that this machine does it all. There's a sales pitch behind these machines. What came out of many of these medicines were companies that made machines to sell these knowledges and these technologies. And when you get out of school, you're told if you buy an iridology machine to study the eye, or a dark field microscope to study the blood, Or if you buy a Meridian stress machine like the EAV machine or the Avatar machine or the Computron machine, it's going to do this and it's going to do that and it's going to do this. It's going to do everything. And there you are, a young doctor. And of course, you have to keep in mind, many of these companies will sell their equipment to anybody. You can be a layman and go out and buy an iridology machine. You don't really need a lot of training. They give their own trainings. So really what you're hit with is a young doctor. What you're hit with as a consumer, therefore, indirectly, are practitioners who may have very little experience, very little education, or they may be medical doctors. Either way, they will sit in the same classes. Because the manufacturer has to stay in business. The manufacturer has to sell his machine. And with that comes training. And with those trainings come exaggerations. So the first issue that you've got to consider, whether you're a doctor, a young doctor, an old doctor, whether you're a young consumer or an old veteran consumer. In other words, as a veteran consumer, you've been everywhere. You've done everything. You've been to every practitioner. You honestly think you could open your own health center now because you've been to so many holistic practitioners. No matter who you are, first thing you have to understand is the claims made on behalf of the teachers and manufacturers of these machines tend to be exaggerated. I'm going to get to the good part. Half of this show will be on the miracle and the virtue and the wonder of these machines, but you have to understand their limitations. Which leads to the second problem. The second problem is a lot of practitioners use one testing modality. I do not understand this. This befuddles me. How you can see the consumer give health recommendations based on assessments of health with one tool. It's very difficult, and I'll tell you why. Because no one machine can really give you the picture. It's extremely difficult. It's risky. So on the basis of one form of testing, if you're just doing muscle testing, if you're just doing iridology, if you're just doing the dark field microscope, if you're just doing pulse and tongue diagnosis, if you're just doing the pendulum, which is another interesting story, if you're just doing one of any type of test that you do, and that's all you do, you're missing the point as a practitioner. And as a consumer, beware. Because you can't get the confluence, the comprehensive, the multifaceted picture of the human body, which is constantly in dynamic flux, through one test at one moment in time and space. It's an absurdity. And of course, when the manufacturer and the tutor and the teacher talk about the power of the dark field microscope, and we say in the vernacular of holistic medicine, oh, that guy there, he's a dark field guy. Oh, that guy there, he's an iridologist. And what does the consumer say? Oh, I went to that guy down the street, he does muscle testing. And then I went to that guy over there down the street, and he does the dark field microscope. And you know what, guys, it's a lot of fun. It really is. So I'm not knocking it. But here's the bottom line. If you don't create a synthesis, and you, the consumer, I'm sorry to tell you the truth, you are not educated enough to create a very good synthesis. You don't have the fundamental educations to do that, even though you may be having a lot of fun. Again, and then again, you might be spinning around in circles. Because even if you try lots of different practitioners, piecing it together is very difficult. So number one, the claims are exaggerated. Number two, using one modality is beyond me. Here's the third issue. The emphasis on testing. The emphasis on testing, which is where the emphasis is. The blood test, the lab test, the machine that you saw that was very expensive and very impressive. Its printout had 10 pages about specific issues contoured to exactly you. these machines and the $200,000 different types of doctors invest in them never, ever, ever take the place of the physical and clinical diagnosis. What is that? The physical and clinical diagnosis. That's you telling your symptoms, the things that hurt you, the things that are problematic for you, you filling out intake forms, the doctor looking at you, looking at your skin, looking at your teeth, looking at your shape, looking at your hair, looking at the shape of your ears, looking at marks on your body, listening to every little question, every little detail, asking you a lot of questions, getting to know you, spending time with you. My sessions with people go a full 2 hours. I try to limit it. But it's easy to spend 4 hours. Now, that's not feasible. But how you can do it in 60 minutes is beyond me. 90 minutes is a challenge. And when we reduce it to 60 minutes and we just walk in and we test and we tell you the recommendations and you're on your way, we make it seem like we do that because we know so much. Honestly, to tell you the truth, I think it's quite the opposite. I think we drank the Kool-Aid when we're doing that. Health is an evolution. Check the logo on my website, straighttalk.cc. Health is an evolution. It's why I put it there. If you're out there listening today and you're sick, or you know someone, a friend that's sick, that's got problems with their bodies, their return to radiant health is an evolution. It's not walk in, get the test, get the herbs, get the recommendations, be on your way, we'll see you in 6 weeks, la-di-da-di-da. Answer a few of your questions and ta-ta. This is nonsense. This is not statistically significant. This is not where the results are. This is where you can mitigate symptoms. If you want to mitigate symptoms, because that's all the time you have to invest, or money, or energy, or whatever, mitigate symptoms. There's nothing wrong with that. But don't mistake healing for mitigation of symptoms. Don't mistake the essences and the high art of holistic medicine for mitigation of symptom. The holistic practitioner is like Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock walks into a room. Sherlock observes everything, takes a photocopy of everything, every second, every day for months, and constantly integrates it into his high computer in between his ears, his brain, his psyche, and then makes recommendations and then listens to responses. Health is an evolution. No, I'm just going to use one test. I'm going to muscle test you. Or I'm just going to take a picture of your eye. This isn't cutting it. When medical doctors look at this, a medical doctor, think of this, a good medical doctor from a good school that uses how many different testing modalities, a good medical doctor may employ $50 million worth of technology. A good medical doctor may employ at least millions in technology to determine what's what. Think of that. It's kind of quizzical to me that holistic medicine is supposed to be an integrated medicine. Honestly, I see more integration in allopathic medicine. Your MD is only suffering from one problem. Well, actually, it's two or three. But it's really not the high system of Western medicine they suffer from. They suffer from legal and financial constraints within that system. They suffer from certain levels of knowledge that they're not exposed to. But the way they approach your health in the ideal of it is actually quite fantastic. It's actually quite outstanding. There's a methodology. And then there is a use of millions of dollars of wonderful equipment to find out what's going on. I could not imagine piecing the picture together without allopathic medicine. I use medical doctors all the time. I applaud their skills if they're good. Again, How does holistic medicine function in relationship to someone and their health concerns without adding another tool into their practice? So, you know, you got to stay away from those MDs. They're dangerous. No, you have to use the medical doctors, use the best medical doctors, and then use your intelligence and your knowledge to counsel your patient, your client, so that you can integrate them into Western medicine and get the best out of medical doctors. You see? That's the concept. Again, it's that integrated model. But let's get back to the straight line here. Now, any machine you use, whether it's one for the eye, iridology, one for the blood, the microscope, muscle testing, any of these machines I've referred to, one of the problems with them, so this is the third or fourth issue now, they give lots of false negatives. When you get muscle tested and somebody tells you that your liver is okay, the percentage of false negative in that statement is very high. People defy tests. No one test catches everything. Holistic testing gives lots of false negatives. Iridology and the like. Everything I've mentioned. Blinking in red lights. Big red flags. False negatives. It's like the mammogram. In Western medicine, if a woman goes to a clinic and gets a mammogram, and that mammogram says, Mrs. Smith, your breast is fine. The amount of false negative in that statement as it relates to a mammogram is frightening. No woman should think, if she's figured out in any way, whether it's through genetic testing, family history, or whatever, no woman should be thinking that when she's told by somebody, an oncologist or a female doctor, an OBG that does breast stuff, that because the mammogram is fine, that she's fine, nobody should relax behind that. Just like nobody should relax behind if you go to your muscle tester and they tell you your liver is fine. Just like if you go to your iridology, your holistic practitioner that takes a picture of your eye and you're told that your spleen or your kidney is fine, should you rest easy? Because the amount of false negatives in these things are very high. But then there's the flip side. The false positives are very low. Okay, this is where you got to really focus in with me. The false negatives are high. The mistake that comes from saying something's not there and it's still really there, and your testing modality, the only one you use, didn't catch it. That's high, and it's dangerous, and it's costly. My beautiful mother died in 1994 of metastatic breast cancer. I was just finishing chiropractic school. I'll never forget the day. My father calls me. I'm in the clinic at the chiropractic school, and he tells me that my mother has breast cancer in every bone in her body. She had been at Sloan Kettering for 2 years. Being told by doctors she was fine. Those were mammograms. But when the mammogram finds something, when it says it sees something, the vast percentages of time, there is a problem. If somebody says via a test that you've got something, that there's an issue there, that's called a positive finding. In holistic modalities, in holistic assessment techniques, from muscle testing to testing of the eye, etc., very often you have a very high correct statement when they find something. In other words, the false positives are very low. So you have false negatives and false positives. False positives are somebody says something's there and it's really not. That doesn't happen too often in holistic assessments. You can trust when they tell you they see something. It's when they tell you nothing's there. So number one, the claim about the machine is exaggerated. Number two, you really don't know who's doing the testing because the testing and the educations behind it is very, very variable. Number three, you get a lot of false negatives. Number four, practitioners tend to use one modality. Four of the top problems. And how does that affect you? Well, you just walked in and somebody told you you needed to do this, this, and this about your health via this type of a test. And that's the backdrop to it. That's something for all of us to think about. Now, I'm going to be introducing another concept here. And that has to do with the fact that, how do we say this? The integration, okay, of all of these different types of modalities has to be looked at in a way where the testing modalities that you're given should be more than one. There should be two to three to four. And then they have to be funneled into, okay, a more comprehensive picture. And that comprehensive picture has to do with the relationship between the tests and the data and alignment with the physical and clinical symptoms. So in the ideal of it, if you have a concern and your practitioner has one, two, three testing modalities, and those testing modalities start to intersect with each other, those testing modalities begin to all say the same thing. So if somebody does a tongue diagnosis and it tells them there's an issue with the liver, and they do muscle testing and it tells them that there's an issue with the liver, and then you do iridology and it tells them that there's an issue with the liver, and then you have symptomology like headaches behind the eye, or you have tight joints, tight tendons. Well, now you're starting to piece it together correctly so that the data is being funneled into a more comprehensive concept. When you have that intersection between one to two to three testing modalities combined with an alignment with physical and clinical diagnoses, when they all come together, then you can begin to say with a higher level of probability, Mrs. Smith, I think we need to clean your liver. Or, Mr. Smith, you have a problem in this area, and this is what we're going to do about it. That's what you call comprehensive assessment. So, taking multiple tests to understand a symptom and then piecing it together using physical and clinical diagnosis, using various educations, anatomy, physiology, neurology, neuroanatomy, and then coming up with, again, a hypothesis, not a black and white, beyond change, beyond alteration, not a black and white speculation, but a true hypothesis, meaning this is what I think it is. Now, this is what we're going to do about it. This is the plan of action. This is the line of approach. This is what I recommend you to do, and then go do it. And that's where really the evolution begins. Because that evolution then is based upon what are we looking at after that? What does the client bring back to the doctor in the subsequent weeks that tells the doctor whether or not his hypothesis is correct? Now that's the circle of health. And I compare that to walking in, telling somebody a symptom, and giving them an herb. I compare that to walking in and having somebody test you with one modality, and based on one modality and very little other types of work, You're given recommendations. And then I encourage you, the consumer, to take a look at a model where you walk in, you're given a comprehensive opportunity to discuss your symptomology. You're given 3 to 4 different types of tests, and then those tests and the data from those tests are integrated into much bigger physical and clinical models. And then it's all pieced together, and a hypothesis is formed, a speculation. And then based on how you respond over 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, you refine and you evolve, and you test again. That's really the best of the holistic model. And that's how then you can start to integrate all these wonderful tools into it. So what tools are we talking about? Iridology. Let's talk a little bit about some of these tools and what you can find out there in the marketplace and what's positive about them and what's negative, what the pros and the cons are. Well, iridology, you'll sit in front of a microscope, and that microscope will be attached to a camera. And with that camera, we can take a picture of your eye. And that picture goes into a computer. It's color corrected, it's made clear, and then the practitioner, who may have trained in a variety of schools with iridology, hopefully they did, listening to a variety of perspectives, hopefully shredding out the nonsense in iridology, and I'll explain, hopefully being left then with just the essence of it. The fine, refined essence, the thing that iridology, taking a picture of the eye, can teach you that nothing can. We'll start to analyze your eye. Now, the eye is a hologram. So again, we're going to introduce a word now. The eye is a hologram. It means like the ear, like the hand, like the foot, like the tongue, like the pulse. The eye can tell you about the entire body. So over the years, since the early 1800s, in iridology, I mean, technically speaking, we say it was invented in the early 1800s by a Hungarian medical doctor who noticed the relationship between disease and changes in the shape of the eye. And this, of course, in the 1920s and 1930s, but even starting in the 1880s, was taken up by the Germans. And the Germans and the German medical doctors evolved a very refined concept of how to take a picture of the eye using whatever technology they had at the time, and then charting out the map of the eye so that in different parts of the eye, of the colored part of the eye, not the white of the eye, but we're talking about the colored part of the eye, the iris, each part of it, like hands on a clock, would relate to a different organ. And so you would take a picture of the eye and you'd study each part of that circular eye and look for all sorts of signs in there that would teach you about the organs. The Americans did this too through someone named Bernard Jensen. Bernard Jensen was a holistic doctor down in San Diego, and he was another famous American iridologist. So iridology was split into two camps. It was split into German iridology and American iridology. And I studied with one of Bernard Jensen's favorite students, a guy named David Pesek, P-E-S-E-K. Great guy, great teacher. And so you studied level 1, level 2, level 3, until you became certified in iridology, and then you went out and practiced. And then you started to figure out, and this was my point, this is the point of the entire show, what within what you learned was nonsense, was very untrustworthy, was very speculative, was very much in the center of iridology, an issue of debate. Of course, they don't tell you that. They don't tell you that this and that finding is debatable. And one example is what you call in the eye, there's something called the health line, healing lines. And if you're familiar with iridology, healing lines in the eye. And if you're not, just understand that when the eye starts to fill in certain spaces with little white lines, as you analyze it over months, you're told over the years that these healing lines mean that the person is, that organ where those problems have been located, that organ is healing on the basis of subsequent eye analyses, because you see these little white lines start to grow into these empty spaces in the iris. And theoretically, you can see all of this in an iridology machine with a picture of a blow-up of your eye. And when I studied iridology, I would look for these things. And I've given hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people pictures of their eyes. I've taken hundreds of pictures of the eye in iridology, looking for these things. And I've never seen them. And I went to my teachers and I said, where are they? And I could never get a straight story about where they were. And so I started to try to make sense out of that. Why are one of the fundamental advantages of taking a picture of the eye, that being to find the healing lines, indications that, yes, what you've done for your clients is improving their health and you can measure it in changes in the eye, and I could never see them. Well, finally, I understood why. The presence of the healing line was a source of tremendous internal controversy within iridology. All the Germans said that they didn't exist. And Bernard Jensen and his camp in America said that they did. And so the verdict was out. Even when I was learning it, the verdict was out. And there's an example of what I mean. You get out of school, you're a young doctor, you buy a machine, you're glad you've got it, you start testing, you get all these books about it. And then you find out that one of the central drivers behind the whole iridological concept is up for debate. And that's what I mean. And everything I'm about to go through today, in the remaining time today, has these potholes within it. Which is not to say getting a picture of your eye, participating in iridology, is not worth it. It's very much worth it. Not if you're looking for healing lines and you drank the Kool-Aid. So the eye. What can the eye tell you? The eye doesn't change too much. And what it tells you is your genetic tendency. When you take a picture of the eye and you blow it up on a screen and you analyze it, it will tell you your genetic tendency. But it's not like you're going to come back in 3 months and that eye is going to be different. Now, there are some things, I can't get into it today, that will change. But the vast advantage of iridology is to tell you what your genetic tendencies are. That by itself, if nothing else, is massive. It can tell you, do you have a tendency to heart disease? It can tell you, do you have a tendency to an eye problem, a hearing problem? It can tell you which organs of your body have more of a chance, based on signs in the eye, for dysfunction. And of course, that is not to say it can tell you whether you have a disease. It cannot do that. It isn't designed to do that. It's not capable of doing that. It cannot give you a diagnosis. It can only tell you this organ, this part of your body, based upon signs in the eye, statistically correlates with a higher incidence of problems when we see that sign. And that never changes. Your tendencies are your tendencies. But the advantage of knowing your tendencies years before those tendencies express, if they ever express at all. Again, that's this thing about the false negative. You understand that just because you're told you have a tendency doesn't mean that it's going to express. It's only a tendency. But if you look at 20 organs in the eye, and you find out that the heart and the kidneys and the large intestine have anomalies, they have configurations on the eye that raise an eyebrow, You can speculate that those organs, based on your genetics, demand more attention. Just by itself, that's used. So everything from a genetic tendency to stagnant lymph, a genetic tendency towards venous stagnation, a genetic tendency towards hormonal imbalance, a genetic tendency towards different types of organ failures, a genetic tendency or a very rooted tendency in sympathetic dominance. And we could go on and on and on. So iridology, correctly stated, can give you tendencies. But if you come back in 6 weeks or 12 weeks, that eye is not going to change. So its positive is tendencies. Its negative is what? That it doesn't change. You can't evolve a person's health with iridology. Now, there are iridologists that claim that you can. And again, this is where people from the outside, the scientists, some of the medical doctors look at this and they see all the disparity and all the confusing positions within iridology. And they look at it and then they say, if it's so confusing to the people that do it, then why should we buy into it? And that's a good question. And it deserves a good answer. And that's the purpose of this show. To give you an understanding that these machines can give you essences. When you take the data they give you and you stretch it out, often because you're only using one machine, you're going to a place where you're going to run into problems. So the pros and cons of iridology. Now, dark field microscopy, the dark field microscope, goes back to a medical doctor from Germany, again, named Gunther Enderlin. And Dr. Enderlin, he had an issue with Pasteur. He represented one of the perceptions in medicine as far back as the early 1800s. He represented one of those perceptions of medicine that said, it's not the microbe, it's the terrain. Furthermore, he introduced another fascinating concept in the 1800s. And he said that in any given moment, a harmless microbe can morph. It can change its form. Can act like a spirit, so to speak. And it can once be innocuous, inert, and harmless. And at the wave of a wand, if the magnetic field of the body were to shift, it can transform into a monster. It can go. You can go. The things in your blood can move from very harmless, latent organisms into killers. And that you could see this under a microscope. You could get a sense of whether a person's microbial titers or tendency to morph dangerous microorganisms was in disarray. That a person could be more or less susceptible to a sudden explosion of infectious organisms. And that was the essences of dark field microscopy. And today, if someone takes a drop of your blood and puts it under a slide, you can put that microscope and see where that person's polymorphic cycle is situated. In other words, where the little microorganisms in their blood and what that terrain looks like might make them more or less susceptible to an explosion of dangerous bugs. To get an insight into somebody on that basis is huge. And that's the beauty of the dark field microscope. Of course, from that point, practitioners extrapolate all sorts of nonsense. I had a very nice person in my office about a month ago, and he tells me he saw a person doing the dark field microscope, and they made some comment about cancer. And the guy left with a thought process that, based on his blood, that guy and cancer are holding hands with each other. And this is where we start taking these jumps. This is where practitioners have to be very clear about what they're seeing and not seeing. And this is where it goes back to exaggerated claims on the basis of the people who produce these machines and exaggerated claims on the basis of people who teach these things. And then, of course, the training is very, very singular, meaning someone that just sees a client with a dark field microscope, doesn't do much else testing, doesn't integrate it into physical and clinical diagnosis, gets left with a very narrow scope, and then statements are made that this client extrapolates from, gets the wrong impression, and all this panic ensues. Or a false sense of security. How many people I have put under a dark field microscope and you look at their blood and their blood is fine? That doesn't mean the person's health is fine. It just means that that tool cannot find the other problems. So you got to get that about those false negatives. Is the iridological finding a false negative? Is the muscle test a false negative? Is the dark field microscope a false negative? And what can you see there? And should you trust what you see? Well, my point earlier and still is, if you see microbes, and under the dark field microscope, when I do it, you can see some monstrosities. You can see massive funguses. You can see all sorts of weird-looking bugs, many of which defy diagnosis, meaning you don't even know what they are. But when they're there, people are in trouble. See, that's a positive. And it's not a falsely positive thing to say when you have microbes in your blood and they look like monstrosities and it's all I can give you at the moment, there's a cause to change that. That's a solid statement, but it's not solid to say there's nothing there and therefore there's nothing to be concerned with. Certainly not if you're just doing one testing modality. The dark field microscope, it looks at your red blood cell. Now, there's another concept. Looking at the red blood cell is an opportunity to speculate what your other cells are doing. I can't look at your liver cells. I can't look at your brain cells. I can't find them. I can't see them. I can infer about them. But I have to what? I have to infer based on symptomology and other forms of testing. With the dark field microscope, you can see a red blood cell. And if that cell has an issue, then perhaps your other cells have issues. The other thing is, you can tell from the shape of the red blood cell things like B12 deficiencies, anemias, inflammatory conditions. You can see the amount of fibrin, which is the product of an inflammatory state in the blood. The amount of fibrin in the blood. You can suspect protein deficiency, mineral deficiency, magnesium deficiency. The lists of what the dark field can tell you are huge. It can tell you things iridology can't, just like iridology can tell you genetic tendencies. And then there's muscle testing. And when you test a muscle and you get a message, when you press down on an arm, you try to push that arm down or pull those fingers open, the body senses the pressure. And a message goes to the brain. And then the brain tells the muscle, hey, muscle, don't let them do that. So you resist the pressure, right? That's how muscle testing works. Well, if you take a finger, your own two fingers, and you press them into an organ, that pressure, that stress to the organ intercepts the electrical circuit from your arm to your brain. When you press an organ, the heart, the lung, the kidneys, the spleen, the ovaries, the testes, the large intestine, the small intestine, it will intercept the circuit from the muscle to the brain. And if it intercepts it, if it provides enough resistance, then that person's muscle will get weak. And that's the essence of kinesiology. Kinesiology is studied in colleges. Kinesiology is a very solid concept if you know how to do it, if you have the kinesthetic skill. So one, to do muscle testing, which has a very good base in science, kinesiology has a fantastic base in science. And number two, to do it with kinesthetic skill, in other words, you have to understand the technique of it, the hands-to-body skill of it. And if you don't, you're not going to get the right answers. And that's the thing. People say, I was muscle tested. I understand that. or I got the dark field microscope. There's another statement on the part of the consumer that never seems to consider the quality of the practitioner. You are never buying, consumer. When you spend your money on a holistic test, you are never buying the test. You're always buying the tester. The test has its own power, but it's the tester that ignites the power in the test. And you can't forget that. You can't write on or write off a test on the basis of simply the test. And when there's so much variability in practitioners, you really have to consider that factor above and beyond. So number one, we'll do the quick review. The claims are exaggerated. There's a ton of false negatives. There's great variability in education. If you get the test and you let it replace physical and clinical diagnosis, you've made a mistake. If you get the test and you speculate and then you hypothesize and then you go out and you recheck and you evolve a concept and then you bring your recommendations outside of nutrition on top of this concept, you start to get a body in dynamic flux. That is how you drive a health program. And it takes time, and it takes effort, and it takes compliance. Listen to this show again. Get on the archive, straighttalk.cc. Come down and see me in Costa Mesa. I'm evolving a fantastic library of antiquity there. That's 949-873-2127, 949-873-2127. Don't forget my school. I'm starting my third one in Costa Mesa within the next month. God bless. Have a great week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Straight Talk on Health with Dr. Vincent Medici. Invite your family and friends to the show and learn about Dr. Medici through his website, straighttalk.cc. He'll give you the tools you need to save your health and prevent unnecessary surgeries and harmful drugs. He's dedicated to your ultimate healing. Join Dr. Medici next week at 10 a.m. for more Straight Talk on Health. This show and the information therein has not been evaluated by the FDA, and recommended products are not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. The information provided on this site is for informational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for advice from your physician or other healthcare professional.